floods, droughts, locusts, climate change. There is a lot going on in and around us in Africa, and super fast. We are all seeing and feeling the effect it has on how we eat, move around, and even how we can make a living. For this reason, join me, Sophie Mbogwa, a Kenyan environmental journalist, for our weekly podcast, The Africa Climate Conversations. Africa Climate Conversations aims at helping you understand what climate change is all about, how it affects you and your family, what is being done in Africa, and what you can do to adapt and mitigate to its impacts, no matter where you are in Africa. Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Africa Climate Conversations. I'm your host, Sophie Mbogwa. Last week, we touched on the effect climate change has on sectors such as energy, agriculture, water, oceans, and coastal ecosystems. This week, how does climate change affect you individually? I'm so glad that Dr. Zablon Owiti is back with us today to discuss this. Dr. Owiti, welcome back and thank you so much for coming.
Thank you as well, and I'm happy to be part of your initiative in promoting, climate information and initiatives in the region.
Now, tell us a little bit of who Dr. Owiti is and what you do.
So, thank you. I'm Dr. Zablon Owiti, and I'm a climate services, expert working with South-South-North based in Cape Town. So, my core mandate is in climate services, and the specific activities and initiatives that we implement include advising users of climate information on correct interpretation and application of available information. We also support integration of climate information into development planning decisions within a number of sectors. Then we also do applied research that assists, development partners, designers of climate service programs, and implementers of programs with bespoke information to understand the social, political, and institutional context of service delivery. This really helps them to really contextualize their programming. We also do convening and connecting stakeholders across the science policy divide, and for example, through facilitating new partnerships between climate and adaptation scientists and different decision making, We also convene learning events, bringing together different stakeholders to, facilitate learning. For example, you bring journalists and, climate services experts to work together. This really supports the journalists to improve their reporting of climate related information. So I think in short, those are the basic activities that we implement, to really promote climate, adaptation in Africa.
Thank you so much. And it's an honor having you on the show.
Thank you.
Now, a report by the Africa Climate Policy Center of the United Nations Economic Commission for Africa on economic growth, development and climate change in Africa stipulates that without action, climate change would impede development across Africa. For example, inaction could cost the Western and Eastern African nations up to 15% of their GDP by 2050. Dr. Owiti, is there something we can do?
I agree with you in terms of the impact of climate change on the economy. And economies are expected to feel the impact of climate change. And for example, on the background, we are also having changes or increase in the population, anticipated to affect, food prices. And even if you look at the insurance industry, the risks will be high. So probably they will have to increase their premiums. That is another indirect impact in terms of the economic impact on the population. And of course the probability of floods weather events destroying food, and that means the supply will decrease, and when the supply decreases, demand goes up, and naturally the prices will shoot. So I totally agree with you that a lot of economic impact will be expected from climate change. And of course, these are things that we are already witnessing. You mentioned the electricity during droughts. So when there is power rationing, then the Kenya Power Generating Company, they use what is called thermal energy. That is, they burn diesel. When they burn diesel, then there is always a cost of diesel, which is included in your bill. So, and you so that means the electricity cost will increase, as a result of, climate change, impact. If you look at the water, the water system and sector and water supply, when there is no water supply, especially in the urban areas, then we have water from the boreholes, and these are sold by the water bosses. And this has two aspects. One, the cost is high. The second one is we are not sure of the how clean the water is, so it has the health aspect as well.
And sticking with effects of climate change on health, over the years, Nairobi used to be considered a low malaria prone area. But as rainfall increases, we are seeing high mosquito breeding and also a return of the Nairobi fly, meaning that local threats of climate change will also threaten achieving global goals, such as goal number three of achieving good health and well-being.
Yeah, sure. That is, really true. I remember when I was young and we hardly came to Nairobi. We were told how cold Nairobi was, and every time people travel to Nairobi, they used to tell us how cold it is. But I think, yeah, things have changed. And again, I agree with you. Mosquitoes, really thrive at a certain, temperature range, which is, relatively high. So what that means is that generally the temperatures in Nairobi has increased, and this has created conducive environment for mosquitoes to thrive, and hence we have cases of malaria increases in areas Nairobi and even its environments. And this is something that also extends to, agriculture. If you look at the tea and coffee, I mean tea farming, then tea thrives in certain temperature ranges, and because of climate change and the areas that are conducive are shifting because the temperatures are increasing. So sometimes they have to move up the elevation to get the areas that tea can thrive. And in terms of climate change, one of the direct indicators of climate change is the temperature. If you can prove that the temperature is changing, then because climate change is caused by global warming, then that is a direct indicator. You don't need to do any other background research to show that it is connected to climate change.
Interesting. We've talked about availability of food both for the coastal region and both for the mainland, especially cities. We've talked about issues of energy infrastructure, flooding, for example, places like Nairobi, cities and stuff. I'm wondering, what can someone listening to us do?
I think to give it a good perspective, I'll start by broadly just explaining what can we do to address climate change. Then I'll narrow down to what you can do at community level or at individual level. So of course there is a lot we can do about climate change, and in general, the solutions to climate change impacts, our effects are put into two big buckets called mitigation and adaptation. So in mitigation, we mean that we refer to measures to reduce the amount and speed of future climate change. And of course, we can only do this by reducing the emission of the heat-trapping gases, the greenhouse gases that I referred to. That means we will slow down, the rate of climate change by removing, for example, carbon dioxide from the atmosphere. And of course, when I say removing carbon dioxide from the atmosphere, it is not simple as that. It has a lot of impact. And it, if you say removing carbon dioxide, it means a lot to economy of some countries. If you look at the countries that are depending on oil, I mean, that means they stop, you know, oil production. That will slow down their economic, you know, development. So, but of course, at that is at international and, you know, national level. We have other, you know, areas of mitigation like, you know, forest. You know, forests are naturally sink of carbon dioxide. So anytime you cut forest, then you you are reducing the sink, natural sinks. That means more carbon dioxide will accumulate in the atmosphere. Yeah. So when we do afforestation, we reduce forest degradation, we encourage tree planting, then, I mean, we are doing mitigation of climate change because we are building a base for the sinks, which is cleaning the atmosphere. Forests are the lungs of the atmosphere, you know, taking away the choking, you know, carbon dioxide. And of course, you know, the farming practices, livestock keeping, we have ways of, you know, reducing emission of methane. And even farming, when, you know, you're doing the plowing, this carbon dioxide, which is kept underground. And if you, you know, till the land, then you expose it. So there are practices which are they are called climate smart agriculture, which we can do at a local level, really at individual level, like minimum tillage, where you reduce the tilling of land, but you can still do, you know, agriculture without exposing CO2 you know, to the atmosphere. Of course, the sources of energy, I mean, in local areas in Africa, you know, around 70% still they use, you know, fuel from you know, wood, and this is also has been attributed to, you know, deforestation. If you do charcoal burning, so if we can shift from those to other sources of, you know, energy, then I mean, we can contribute in a small way to mitigating, you know, climate change. With that, now I'll move to the second, you know, way of addressing climate change, which is adaptation. So adaptation generally means how do we live with the negative impacts of climate change. Adaptation strategies can be implemented at national level, regional level, even at local level.
Yeah.
I mean, you can, let's say high temperatures, you know, you can have cool roofs, or you can plant trees, air conditioning, I mean, to cope with the increased, you know, temperatures. At the sea, you know, in the coastal regions, because of sea level rise, you can basically build seawalls and restore wetlands. And of course, there are places where you have to, you know, plant or establish mangroves, because mangroves, they slow the impact of, you know, the ocean waves, or, you know, to reduce flooding. And of course, generally, preparedness, emergency preparedness and planning that takes change into account is one way to adapt to the increased frequency of climate, you know, extremes. And of course, the capacity to anticipate, plan for, and reduce the dangers of, you know, the social changes brought about by climate change. And of course, to seize opportunities associated with this, you know, the changes. So opportunities like in arid, just for example, in arid areas, when we anticipate that the rains would be above normal, then, I mean, this will present them opportunities like water harvesting, developing, you know, water ponds to harvest this water such that when the rainfall, you know, ends, then they will have water to you know, to use afterwards. So that is an example of how these extremes sometimes provide opportunities, because in normal rainfall seasons, these arid areas, they don't receive, you know, really adequate rainfall to sustain most of their, you know, activities.
What about people in informal settlements?
What they really can do to respond to, for example, a potential flood event. So this sometimes requires behavior change, or, you know, coping mechanisms, such as, these are really very basic, but they are the things they can do at that level. Of course, there is what the government can do at, some national level, at a national level in terms of infrastructure to drain water, sanitation systems. But what can they do at that level? I mean, they can, for example, protect their homes with the sandbags, or dig, temporary drainage trenches, ditches, or build their homes on raised concrete slabs. Of course, because they have stayed there for a long time, they have the experience, they know normally where the level of water reaches, so they can have their slabs or foundations raised beyond that level. Or also, some of the floods, they are caused because of the drainage systems are blocked. Of course, this could be the role of the city council or the county, government. But of course, they can also clear the refuse from the blocked, storm water drains to enable them cope with the flooding at that level. And of course, in terms of water resources and in drought where there is limited water, there are other social change in social behavior, like efficiency in using water, because when there is drought, the water is less, then they need to really change the behavior. In urban settings, then we may also think of retrofitting and the water system in the house. Such that like the faucets, the taps, you have a tap that you press, not the ones you turn around, The ones that waste a lot of water. Imagine when you are you are brushing, and so the one that is pressed with the knob, it only water comes out when your hand is on the knob. So those are simple things, but in terms of efficiency, if everybody does them, then the contribution can be a lot in terms of adapting to, less water due to climate, change related impact.
And staying with the cities, does gardening, balcony gardening, help?
Sure, balcony gardening is helping in both cases, both mitigation and adaptation. And of course, food security is a major, resulting from, climate change. So city gardening, it will, increase, food security, but it has elements of cooling the environment. So I'm looking at a scenario where most people in a particular, locality or, estate in an urban area, then they do that. Then it will have a mitigation, both mitigation and adaptation effects in terms of food security and also moderating high temperatures. And that will make us cope with the increased temperatures.
What about when we building our houses, and instead of paving the entire pavement with concrete, can we? I saw somewhere where instead of having the entire pavement filled up with concrete, then you have one space that is left for green space. How can we improve in terms of leaving more space that is more green to ensure that water is absorbed into the soil?
Yeah, I think that is a one way of actually addressing this at an urban setting, but that really needs a policy. At subnational or national level, in the urban, even the metropolitan, this could be included in the building codes, such that when you are establishing, a certain type of building, then you are required to leave green spaces where you can plant trees, you can have a garden, just like currently we have a policy on water heating in the house, and this is just to ensure energy efficiency and encourage using of solar energy instead of using energy from the grid. So there is currently a regulation that requires that if you have a house that I think uses more than 100 liters per day, then you need to have a solar. The water that is used in the house for like in the bathrooms should be from the solar, the solar heater. So that is a policy that is also shifting us towards really mitigating climate change, because anytime you use more electricity, that means you use more water. Every time you use more water in urban setting, then that means you use more electricity. So water and electricity uses are directly linked, because a lot of energy is used to drive that water to your place, and a lot of water is used also to bring that energy, the electricity to your place. As long as hydropower is still our major source of energy. So water and energy are directly related. If you use high water, more water, more electricity, more electricity, more water.
Yeah.
So any savings, efficiency in water and efficiency in energy, they benefit each other.
We mentioned livestock keeping being a huge contributor to greenhouse gases. What can livestock keepers do to reduce their emissions?
The greenhouse gas that they produce is methane.
Yes.
And you can, methane, if you do the biogas, those who are doing biogas at home, they use the waste from the animals. By just trapping the waste and using it as a source of energy at home, then you are burning it and you are not exposing it to the atmosphere. Actually, you are using it to that is also a clean energy.
Does it have to be large-scale farming, or do I have, if I have just two cows, can I manage to actually do biogas?
Yeah, if you have two cows, you can do biogas.
So that means for those people who are in agriculture and they have ruminant animals, they can use this available resource at home to generate biogas that they can use for cooking, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Of course, related to this is also the eating habits. I mean, just generating the 1 kg of meat, it uses a lot of water. And besides using that, a lot of water is the methane that is directly emitted. So when they say one way is at individual level to mitigate and adapt to climate change is reducing eating habits. If you can shift from eating meat to other food, then you are already contributing to mitigation and adaptation. Because large scale farming is for generally for beef. So if the demand goes down, then the number of livestock also will reduce.
Sticking with behavior change, probably that means cities also adopting new behaviors such as cycling and walking more often. But then that goes deeper into the transport infrastructure within cities, right?
Of course, when we go into transport sector, there are a lot of elements that we might want to discuss. What you are saying, non-motorized transport. Change in behavior generally, like carpooling. If you live in the same estate and you come to town, a group of people, each of us don't need to drive their cars to town. We can do what is called carpooling and say, this week we'll be using your car. And, the three of us, we don't use our car. So every week you only use one car instead of four cars. Those are behavior changes that, contribute to, a mitigation and reducing the emissions. Of course, the planning of the city, like, what is called the bus rapid transport that have its dedicated lane and, it carries more people than having several, buses, small one. So those are ways of, and light rails also as well within the towns. They decongest the roads. They make people really, not everyone use their cars to town. So we are still far from reaching those, but if you go to developed world, you witness how they work, and even non-motorized transport in developed countries like Swaziland, Geneva. If you go there, you are amazed. Like most people are driving are cycling to work, and use only cars probably over the weekend for family outings. But of course, the accords. If you look at the road infrastructure, there provisions for pathways for cyclists, those who are walking, and motorcycles. So it is provided for, but it also depends with the attitude. It needs some attitude change.
Dr. Witty, thank you so much for your time. And sincerely appreciate you coming over and, taking your opportunity, this opportunity to take us through the definition of climate change, weather, global warming, and also we've looked into how it affects us and also what we can actually do. And I sincerely appreciate you coming over today. And I hope that you will be a regular contributor on this podcast.
Thank you very much for your time as well. And of course, it would be interesting to, contribute to your podcast, because one of our mission is to really to spread the gospel of, climate change in terms of adaptation, mitigation. And of course, sometime in future, we might also talk about just generally climate services, look at it as a service, not the scientific and impact, but how is it generated? How is it relayed? What are the challenges? How is it communicated?
Absolutely. Thank you. Thank you so much again. Remember, you can contribute to Africa Climate Conversations by way of asking a question or suggesting a topic you would want to hear discussed. Now, you can find details on how to do so on my contact page on my website, sophiembogwa.com. Next week, we will start on COVID-19 and climate change in Africa. But until then, kwaheri. Do have yourself a lovely, safe, and productive week ahead. Floods, droughts, locusts, climate change. There is a lot going on in and around us in Africa, and super fast. We are all seeing and feeling the effect it has on how we eat, move around, and even how we can make a living. For this reason, join me, Sophie Mbogwa, a Kenyan environmental journalist, for our weekly podcast, The Africa Climate Conversations. Africa Climate Conversations aims at helping you understand what climate change is all about, how it affects you and your family, what is being done in Africa, and what you can do to adapt and mitigate to its impacts, no matter where you are in Africa.